Welcome, everybody. This is Kathy Bilski, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show on UPRN Radio. And this is Friday night, the 15th of April, 2016. Tonight, I have a very special guest. I have Kat Bahe on, who is a Diné and is activist, and if you don't know what that word is, because not many of us do, you know the tribe mostly by Navajo, and he's going to talk about the genocide that's actually going on there and a lot of other issues that we just don't hear about. Now, I was supposed to have another Indian activist on, and something really awful happened to his brother and his immediate family, and I would like everyone just to take just a little bit of time to send his family and everyone involved energy. And I have to bring this up. He was supposed to be on my show April 1st, and that's actually when the radio station went down, and I wouldn't thought much about it, but about 10 minutes before the show, his internet goes down. He can't use his Mac computer, and he cannot call out, which I, like I said before, I thought that was overdoing it a little bit, but today his family was killed. And this, I'm torn up. This really breaks my heart. But this is what happened to Native American Indians, and no one hears about it. Now, they're also called the invisible people. And our government, the United States, is committing genocide against them. So before I start to cry, please send my Native American friend, and I'm not going to say his name, just send him and his family some lovely, peaceful, calm energy. And let them be divinely inspired how they can move forward in peace. So, Bahe, thank you for coming on the program.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I have a question. You are a Diné from the Diné tribe. And I actually have to say I've never heard that before, but when someone says Navajo, I go, oh, yeah, I know who they are. How did the name get changed?
Well, that's just part of colonization. European discoverers show up and they give Indians names. So just like the Sioux, the people that are called Sioux, and other nations have different names, and yeah, that they're officially recognized by those names. I mean, a lot of times they're colonial names. Navajo came from the Spanish, because Spanish were here since about maybe the earlier part of the 1500s. They came into our region. And they gave certain tribes with that name, Navajos, Navajos de Apache, Navajos de Gurechos, and we were the Gurechos, kind of means, refers to some kind of nomadic type people. So Navajos is, we don't know what really it means, but that's where it came from, and that's when the American government kind of drew out all the states around us. They started calling us Navajos. And Diné means our traditional name. Diné means the people, the human beings. That's all that means, Diné. So we call ourselves Diné. We call our language Diné, or Diné language, Dinébazad, is what we speak.
Now, I have talked about a lot on air about the Flint water crisis that's happening in Michigan, about the lead poisoning that's happening there. And I talk about it because I'm from there. I have family there. And what that did is bring to my attention what was actually happening on Navajo land, except, you know, and there's no worse or no better. They're both evil at what's happening. I think yours has been happening a heck of a lot longer. Can you explain to everybody what is happening to your water supply?
Well, other than the way the states have created all these different laws how to allocate water to themselves and to allocate it away from the reservation, besides that, the waters, a lot of them have been getting contaminated, and it's actually it's not just, you know, particular to this area. It's kind of happening everywhere. And now I'm hearing that the pipeline, the big pipeline from Canada, it has that leak in the Dakota, and so our waters are being polluted from old mines and old poison that are just ready to be unleash themselves into our waters, and it's everywhere. People need to really pay attention.
So when we're talking, if I could, pollution, we're talking down through your water supply, radiation that's coming down. Yeah.
The radiation from the old uranium mines.
Right.
The tailings that were left abandoned. And
that's part
of the policies or the genocidal policies that, you know, they'll clean up the waste, but they'll wait on the Indians first, you know, because it's not impacting a big population. It's kind of just a sparse populated area. So that's how they justify waiting. But a lot of these wastes are you know, during floods and rain, it keeps going into the rivers. And I don't know how many people have heard of the Grand Canyon. So a lot of the contamination that's happening on our reservation is headed for the Grand Canyon. And also they've created a reservoir, a giant reservoir, which they call a lake. A lot of that water is, you know, goes down into the Grand Canyon. So the recent contamination happened in the Four Corners area, where there were some old gold mines and the poison ponds breached, and then it dumped into the rivers, and the river basically turned orange. And so that water is not good for farming. There were a lot of farms, and most Navajos were the ones that were using it to irrigate their fields, and so they were unable to farm last year.
It's so criminal. I mean, absolutely. And then you had to have water trucked in, and you still do. And it's my understanding that some of the water they were trucking in were in oil tankers.
They were old tanks from the fracking activities that they're doing in that area, that same area. So that was, I guess, a cheap way. They always go with the cheaper way, the most feasible way to do anything. So they decided to use the old tanks, and some of them have certain levels of radiation in them too, because fracking, it's hard to explain fracking, but there's a lot of different toxins that come out of the ground when they frack. So a lot of those tanks have, you know, are contaminated already, and they use that to haul water out to the Indians.
I mean, that's exactly why you want clean water to be. I mean, if you wanted that kind of water, you'd just be drinking out of the stream.
Yeah, everybody uses drink directly from nature. Everybody used to. We all did, you know, but. And so, yeah, water is a huge issue, and they made policy where they they're able to control all the rivers, even though it goes through the reservation, they're able to control how much water must continue on down through the reservation and let it go out to where the states can capture those waters. So that's their name. But the Indians, they don't have any big wells or anything. People just they haul water in 50-gallon barrels, 20-gallon containers, and to their homes out in the desert. And I mean, you think I'm talking about Africa or somewhere in the Middle East? You know, this is right here in Arizona, New Mexico.
Well, I don't think many, many people that are listening actually know history. And do they know about all the genocide that's been perpetrated, and it's still happening, against the Navajo and the Hopi, and how you've been forced to move off your lands? Can you explain some of that history?
And then probably a lot of people don't. They probably know what genocide is. And when you see today, you hear a lot of things on the news. I don't know if it gets out. Mass killings and bombings and whatever, just to wipe out hundreds of people and their whole cities or their whole villages. And so I think people will think that it's genocide. But in the United States, the reason why people don't know is because it's a very elaborate, systematic means of applying genocide here. A lot of it is psychological. A lot of it it's so elaborate that it seems like it's very subtle the way they do it. But people are losing their lives. Many people have lost their lives, and not only through radiation and different poisonings, but through altering their culture, taking away the culture. And that's what genocide means, that you take a group of people and you take away their way, their religion, their language, their culture. You restrict them from possessing those things through systematic means, either through boarding schools or a lot of it's where they tell people, way back when they're young kids, they tell them that being an Indian is no good anymore. You have to become, like a normal human being. You have to find a job. You have to.
You were ripped away from your parents, much like they did to the Aborigines. And, they put them in missionary schools, and they did the same thing with the Indians, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And then so eventually we become the product of those that being stolen from our families and from our villages, from our Aboriginal places. And then we become educated, and then we finish high school, and then we're a whole different human being now. And we are looking for either join the military or finding some vocational training. And the rest of us that didn't make it, we become alcoholics, and a few of us, we try to return back to our country where the animals are, where nature is, way out in the remote places. But only a few of us try to return. But a lot of them have left the reservation because the only place where there's job opportunities is hundreds of miles from the reservation. And then we become parents. We have to raise our kids in an urban place, way different than the way we were raised. But then we're so busy, we don't have time. We just stick something in the oven and we cook. We don't cook for them traditional foods. We start speaking English to them because their homework are in English. And we sit them down in front of the TV, and that entertains them. That's our babysitter. And then so we are disconnected from who we once were. And so that is genocide in the end. We see an Indian person, but they don't possess that whole natural quality that their ancestors had.
Yeah, let me explain to the listeners, if I may, that when you were forced to move, all right, you're living on a land where nature is providing everything you need. You're not paying for water. You're not paying for electricity. You live off the land. So you're not having to go to the grocery store and put out money for that. So now somebody comes in and draws a boundary line between the Hopi and the Diné tribe. And, okay, you're forced to move now. And they put you in these homes. But now you've got to pay for electricity. You got to pay for the water and the heat. And also you have to buy your food. I mean, I saw really interesting documentary. I mean, it was Rainbow, and I'll have to look up the rest of it.
Broken Rainbow.
Yes, Broken Rainbow. And they just came in with bulldozers and bulldozed the plants to starve you out so you would have to move. I mean, that's like slaughtering the buffalo.
Yes, and Broken Rainbow talks about the law that was passed by Congress to partition the land, the territory, and then to remove certain people that were caught on the wrong side of that new partition. And even some Hopis were caught on the wrong side. And so people did get relocated. And the government says it's all voluntary, but it's all forced. It's all forced on them. And so besides the destruction of whole acres of meadows of native plants, and they do it by dragging these giant chains, kind of like what you see down at the harbor, these big giant chains that hold the big ships that tie them up. It's kind of big things, long things they drag across the meadows, and it's got these special things, hooks or something on there where it rolls and it rips out everything. It makes the ground all barren, and they do that to the trees too. And so that's what they did to make people not herd sheep anymore. And then they had a policy within those laws to reduce their animals. The sheep have less horses, have less cows. And they have policies where they were going to, they capped off all the established wells that the people relied on. So the only thing we have now is a few natural springs, and we're talking in the desert, high desert area. And I can go on and on with all the different policies, regulations that they put in place to force the people out. You're restricted from collecting your medicine, tobacco, holding ceremonies, having social, family reunions, anything, any event that you have where large amount of people gather, you have to have a permit. It has to be approved by the government, the BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And then the policing, anytime the police shows up at your home, and they're just there to intimidate, ask you, how come there's a new set of windows sitting outside your home? What are you going to do with it? How come there's new lumber? What are you up to? You know, there's roofing paper. What are you up to? And so on. So this, and living under these things, there's a few elders actually that were able to live this way for many years. And there are a few people that just couldn't take it and they decided to leave. So this is what I mean by the way genocide is being implemented, and not with bullets and machine guns and mowing down people or dropping some kind of chemical bombs on them, but it's a really, you know, advanced psychological warfare that has taken place here in northern Arizona. So people
well,
know about it.
It's also, you know, you can say it's chemical warfare because they allow that mine to leak that uranium into the water. You know, they knew what they were doing. And it's my understanding also that there are no laws anywhere to make these mine owners clean up their mess after they're done?
Right now, there's the Peabody Energy, Peabody Coal Company, the big coal giant in the world. He's no longer a big giant coal giant, and it's filed for bankruptcy just this past week. Peabody Coal Company has almost 200,000 acres that they have a lease on, and they're about to complete mining that, but now I think they're going to probably shut down, leaving all their poisons, all the petrochemicals that they use, all the different explosives that that they end up dumping accidentally, and they're not going to cover up some of the open pit mines that they left open. And then there's a pipelines that they built, and they're not going to take those pipelines out. So, but they're empty toxic pipelines that they're leaving. And people have gotten, it caused a lot of health effects throughout the 40 years or so that they've been mining there. People try to have a lot of breathing problems, asthma, and a lot of headache. A lot of people had a lot of bloody nose, and sheep were poisoned, and of course, our water were poisoned, and the air was. And so it's just... Yes, they don't want to take responsibility, and there are actually laws that exist where, they're never at fault. They're not responsible for contaminating or impacting on people's health or the environment, what they have done. So it's really unusual how this law, these corporations are able to get away, and that's why it's important for everybody. It's not going to just be affecting Indigenous people in America. It's going to be affected. It's already impacting, as you're saying, Lake Michigan. It's already impacting other people. And so wherever people are trying to stop different things, people need to support a lot of these efforts. People might look at these people as just, hippies and low-life people gathering together and protesting, that people, there are a lot of intelligent people out there trying to mobilize and stop these things that are happening to our environment, and people need to support. If you can't be there with them, there's other ways to support all these different issues that are happening, in the States.
Absolutely. When you were talking about the uranium mines, wasn't there a movie or something called Yellow Dirt? And, nobody told the Indians, they actually asked them all, the natives, to come and work in the mines. And then they built their houses on the uranium piles, didn't they?
Yeah, a lot of those, that story takes place in another famous sightseeing tourist place. It's called Monument Valley. And I don't know if that's the documentary that has there's a mine that was up on top of the mesas, and they were just dumping all this radioactive tailings down the cliffs, and the wind would pick all that dust up and then blow it across wherever Hollywood was shooting the movie. John Ford was out there on a set, and they're being exposed to all this stuff.
Isn't that how John Wayne
also? John Wayne was, yeah, they think a lot of people got cancer from Monument Valley, and that was part of that's what people think. And then because a lot of the local Dinette people that live below the mesas, they all got cancer. A lot of people didn't survive. And it's still happening. It's still, uranium, radiation is a constant thing. It doesn't go away unless it's, contained in a certain way where it's covered up properly. But, so that's, I think you're referring to that documentary that talks about what happened in Monument Valley. And there are still a lot of abandoned mines and a lot of tailings that are just mixed into all the sand dunes. And if you ever seen pictures of Monument Valley, you know, they have these really nice sand dunes among the rocks and the scenery. And so some of those sands are probably, you know, contaminated. And
you know, it's really bizarre and sad because we don't know where to go anymore or how you can get contaminated. Yeah, you can be driving down the road, and now they're starting to truck nuclear material on our roadway. You know, and I'm going cross country. And you could be driving by and get zapped and not even know it.
Yeah, we're being exposed daily to a lot of uranium transportation of nuclear elements. Either plutonium or any other or wastes that are trying to make its way across from back east to the Nevada area where they're going to store a lot of the waste. And then they're going to, I think they're already accepting international wastes too. Some European countries are too small, so they don't have a place to store all the waste. And so I think some of it are making its way to Nevada. And we don't know. We don't know what's on the trains that go through our towns and cities in the middle of the night. So it's, you know, just, we just have to become more aware of our surrounding and what is happening, because we have to make our future a much better place for our great-great-great-grandchildren, you know, if we really want to do that. And and yes, it is. All these things are taking place.
Now, you actually allow volunteers to come on and work with, you know, the elders. And you want to talk about your volunteer program?
The relocation program, as I kind of explained, how it devastated our culture, and then how very few traditional people are left, remaining very determined to continue herding their sheep and in whatever way they want to keep their ceremonies going in secret. And a lot of our own people, as I have said, the younger generation are not willing to return, because they have adapted to the urban American world environment. And so we began a support network years ago, and now today some of these support people have been coming every winter or during the summer to help certain elders keep their sheep going. And mainly that's the thing, that's our the sheep are sort of our weapon. We want to keep the sheep herds alive and maintain the grazing, even though the governor is trying to threaten to take all the sheep, and they've already confiscated many of them. But we try to have supporters, non-natives and people from outside that come out willing to live with these elders. And even though they don't know the language, but you know, there are ways to communicate. So a lot of these supporters, they come out, they haul firewood, they chop firewood, haul the water for them, the elders, and they herd the sheep. And sheep is kind of, in any revolution, people have something. And so we have, the only thing we have now is the sheep. And so we call them the sheep herders. We need sheep herders, but they do more than just sheep herding. And so we ask for volunteers, and we have a support network that oversee supporters coming in, and we find them a place to stay. We orient them about the area and the work that needs to be done. And so we need, a lot of them are young people, strong and able and really beautiful people and humble people, able to, you know, cope with the language and the hardship of living out there where there's no cell phone reception, no running water, and then sometimes nature is pretty rough, and the cold or the heat. And but it, I think that there's a lot of learning, a lot of wisdom that people have gotten out of herding sheep, even for one winter. And so,
well, yes, because then you get to hang out with these incredible elders that have knowledge. You know, people forget that what comes with age, hopefully, usually, you learn a lot, you have the knowledge. And it's, you know, they share that knowledge, don't they?
Yeah, it's probably one of the greatest human connections. I think it's not only there, but if anybody has ever lived in Tibet or lived somewhere else in some exotic place, in a village, as a guest and foreign guest, I think that, you know, it's almost like that. You just connect with people, even when you don't know the language. You just connect with people on the human level, on the natural level, and then I mean that's what has taken place out here, and to get the knowledge of some. Some of these non-native supporters have left. I know I've been doing this for a long time, so I've seen a few left, and they know how to weave from using wool. They're able to have knowledge of dyeing the wool and spinning, making wool into yarn. Some supporters know how to process corn, how to grow it, and how to process it and mill it and make food out of those corn, different variety of corn, and then being able to know natural survival technique, digging out their own water and finding places where there's water, or the natural remedies from the vegetation or foods from the vegetation. So it's just all these knowledge that people have learned from there, and there are a few supporters that continue to return.
Oh, what a gift. I'm sorry. I'm coming out. So I'm just trying to figure out what would be a good time. I plan on doing some volunteer work if I'm accepted.
Yeah, and then groups can come out, too. Groups can come out. We have people that come out for a week or something, and they would visit different home sites, different elders' places, and they would do different projects. And we have that too if people want to come out as a group.
Oh, that is so cool. I mean, that's really, really lovely. We'll have to talk more about that later so we can get that information out so people, you know that it's there to begin with. What a gift. I mean, I don't think you can learn. We're talking learning basic skills that we need, we should have, you know, just to live. But it's not part of our school curriculum, is it?
No, it should be. I think this is something that some great-grandma might have taught, you know, way back, how to farm and how to fish and how to process those foods, and great-grandpa about hunting and all these things and trapping, but not to exploit, but to for survival purposes. You know, there was just so many knowledge out there. And so it's just, I mean, it's a good way, for me, it's a good way, and then also at the same time, you're fighting something that's trying to destroy all nature. You're going against that, and you're doing it with the people, with other human beings that have knowledge of the earth and making a stand. You know, it's not happening in some street corner holding up signs and marching and all that, but it's happening out here in a remote place. And so it's the same thing. I see it as the same thing, you know, sitting out a message, but at least you're learning a lot of great things, and the experience is great, too.
Oh, gosh, yes. And I mean, no cell phones. I mean, if that doesn't force you to talk to people, I don't know what does. Because you don't have anything else to do. I love it. Real quick, can you tell everybody about Leonard Peltier and who he is?
I don't know much about Leonard's case, or I know that he's been in prison for quite a long time. Some of the indigenous people say that he is a prisoner of war. He is in prison for something he didn't commit. There was a situation that had to do with uranium, actually, in South Dakota. And the BIA was trying to make the Oglala or the Sioux tribe or Pine Ridge tribe to sign leases, and then at the same time there was this movement happening on the reservation against all the injustices that the tribe, the tribal police, and the government was. There was a terror happening on the reservation, and it was all instigated by the tribal officials and the police and the BIA. It was supported by the BIA, and it turned out that they were backed by the companies that want to come in there and mine. And eventually there was some resistance from the local people, and there was some shootout that happened, armed confrontation, and some two FBI agents were killed in that shootout, and one Indian man was killed, and then eventually Leonard Peltier. Other people were accused. Other people were acquitted that were charged for the murder, and eventually Leonard Peltier was the last one, and he ended up being charged and had been in prison for I think more than 35 years, I would guess. So that, and this was this happened in the Oglala on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota.
And then he was shipped to Florida, wasn't he?
He's been transferred many different places, all the different federal penitentiary, and but there was a huge cover up and about his case. The FBI created their own witnesses and created their own story, and Peltier and other Indian people that were present during that time that day. It really conflicted with the FBI story, and that's how Leonard got convicted.
If anybody wants to write to Leonard or actually send him a donation, he's like in his 70s, and his health is really, really bad, and they still have him in maximum prison all these years. His name is Leonard Peltier, P-E-L-T-I-E-R, and it's number 89637-132, USP, as in Pat, Coleman 1, P.O. Box 1033, Coleman, Florida, 33521. And again, could you give out, how people can contact you if they want to do volunteer work, or even send you guys a donation, or even talk to you more about what's going on, or,
Right now we're continuing to try to ask more people to come out. It's getting really, the situation out there is real intense right now, very crucial to bring more people out there. More recently, we had some family got their a lot of their cattle were taken, and they got their cattle back, but not back to their original ranch that they had.
And weren't they charged for that too? To get their cattle back, they had to pay like a ransom to the government.
Yeah, I think they paid some $4,000 for the cattle, and then on top of that for the shipping costs to get them to where the it was legal to put them, and according to the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the government. And so the people don't have their cattle on their homestead anymore. But then also more families, these elders that I'm talking about, they're all being targeted. And So we're trying to get more people out there. The elders are getting older, much weaker, and we're just doing our best to comfort them and so they can stay, want to stay on the land. And so we're keeping the sheep going. We're keeping the sheep. A few horses are penned up because they're illegal to graze. And the few cattle that they have, we're trying to help out with many different things. And then next year will be our 40th year of resistance. And so we're, and then when things like people, when people get their animals taken or if they get arrested, and the people that network out there, they also try to help with transportation and so they can, the families can go to the court and things like that. And our, and the group that that I assist, their name is Black Mesa Indigenous Support, and their website is Black Mesa. Black Mesa, let's see, supportblackmesa.org. That's their URL, supportblackmesa.org. And then their email is blackmesais@gmail.com. blackmesais@gmail.com. And so that's where you can go. You can go to the supportblackmesa.org or Black Mesa Indigenous Support website, and there's places where you can donate or other ways you can help as well. So a lot of information there, too.
Now, do they also have on the website, like, people in the government that we can actually write to and say, look, dudes, you know, we're watching you now. You are no longer invisible.
Yeah, to officials of the Bureau of Indian Affairs agencies in Phoenix and on the Hopi agency as well, and the Justice Department and the Department of the Interior, they both work together to not just with our situation, but all other Indian reservations they oversee, and they oversee the law enforcement out there. So, and then people can write to these places and let them know that, you know, they need to, a lot of the people return back to their ancestral lands, and their culture is very important because, you know, these cultures are endangered now. You hear of endangered animals. Our cultures are endangered. Our identity are endangered. So as well as our territories, ancestral territories, and I just want to also say that, you know, we always have worked and supported the traditional Hopis back in the 60s throughout the 1990s. We all used to work together with them, and a lot of the old chiefs and elders are gone now of the traditional Hopis. And they have a really unique history as well, their resistance. Since 1948, since World War II, to about early 1990s, and so if people want to learn more about the traditional Hopi resistance to the Peabody coal mining and their solidarity with Diné people of Big Mountain, you know, a very unique story, and I think it has inspired me.
Well, you inspire me. I mean, everything that you're saying. And can we touch base? Do you know, or have you ever heard of Dr. Joseph Medicine Crow, who just passed away at the age of 102?
I barely heard of that information. I don't really know, because I think it sounds like it's more the northern people, the northern plains, or... Yeah, maybe not the Dakota, but somewhere else.
Uh-huh. They said he was the last Plains war chief. And then he got all his initiations done in World War II. When I heard of this and I kind of checked him out, I mean, it's amazing. His story is amazing. It should be made into a movie. With all proceeds going to you guys.
Through Black Mesa Indigenous Support?
Pardon?
You mean through Black Mesa Indigenous Support?
Well, yeah, of course.
It goes to the people, all the efforts that people we're all trying to do. You know, I'm a translator, and I'm also on land coordinator, and I organize things on the land, and most of the things I organize are considered illegal by the government, but that's the only way we can do things. In secrecy, or we, expose what we're doing. So that I do the online coordination
now,
and the translator.
Can people actually, do you need like blankets and things like that sent to the tribe, or?
No, we're okay. We just need people, and we're available to share and also learn from them. And I think that's a best way that I have seen solidarity work, where we learn from each other, trust each other, and we're on equal levels. It's not like, well, I'm the Indian, I was born here, and you're just a visitor. It's not that way. And so I think that's the best way. We just need people, because we need to build this wisdom. We need to build this, rebuild the human spirit, and they help us, and we help them. And I think that so people can come out and stay for 2 days, or see what it's like out there.
I have to tell people though that in any other country, they have programs set up, but you got to pay them to go and do service work. It's true. I was like, I'm not paying you. I'm giving you my time, But that's what actually, so to hear you say, you can come, we'll find you a place to live, and all you have to do is service and give yourself. And by doing that, you are going to receive gifts that you won't ever receive anywhere else. And that's learning basic skills.
Yeah, and then knowing who you are, I guess some people realize, they come there and I'm just American, and then when they leave, I'm actually somebody else, this is my roots, this is where I come from, this is, my European roots are somewhere, and they start sort of know that. I don't know what they do with it later, but I think they end up cherishing that new thing just by being up there, realizing what identity really means, and yes, it's many things to take home with them from up there.
Well, you're also showing them family, are you not?
Yeah,
and,
family.
And working together, and really helping each other, and this is to me enlightenment in action.
Yeah, I've seen non-natives come back, return, and they're greeting their grandma up there, saying, Yat Eshema, which means, good greeting, my mother. And these non-natives speaking our language, being really, honoring this elder that's up there, calling her mother. And in return, the elder would say, oh, Yat Eshiyaj, or Shaway, good greetings, my son, or good greetings, my child. And that's, that's the kind of a relationship they have for if they come to visit up there for several times. So that's a really close way. I think that's a nice relationship that the elders have with non-native.
Well, it's also, teaching by example.
Mm-hmm.
And, they are, I have to say, very connected to the Creator. They're very awakened spiritual beings, and all they have to do is be. if you know what I mean, and just be what they are. Am I making sense? Now, they're very high energy spiritual beings that all it can do is help you raise your energy even more, which is a gift in itself.
It's a spiritual world, and a lot of the non-natives have seen some of the rituals, and they just take what they observe, and I've never seen any non-natives try to take something with them that that they want to, you know, use somewhere else in an attempt to hold some ritual or something, you know. A lot of non-natives that have come up there, they're there for to resist this corporate madness, and that's their whole purpose of being there. But when they witness the ritual, you know, they kind of just stay back and let the natives, you know, have their rituals and in the lodges or outside or somewhere, you know. So they're just there to help, you know, make sure that the people can do it. And the culture, the surrounding nature, everything, you know, they learn about it. Just having, you know, using the water and eating the medicine or the food, you know, the elders teach them how to give back to nature if they're going to, you know, or say something or give something to the vegetations, and how to relate to the different animals out there. You know, this is what they take with them. So that's why that's not only human to human relationship, but, you know, it's more of a human to nature, to ecology, to animal kingdom relationship.
What an incredible vacation, y'all, you know, I mean, wow. We are out of time.
Okay.
I got you to talk longer. Sorry.
Yes,
my bad.
Yes, I know. thanks to everybody.
And I have a lovely weekend. And again, thank you again for coming on. And maybe you can come on way later and do some updates. And just reconnecting. All right. You have a wonderful time. And thank you again.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Aloha.
Good night.
Everybody, I hope you this brought this to your awareness, and, you know, I mean, what a lovely thing to do for a couple of weeks. What an honor, you know, if you're called to come and do some service time. You know, what an opportunity. You might want to think about it. I hope you have a wonderful week this week, and, you know, do some random acts of kindness for somebody. And next week I have, somebody, and I can't remember his name, please forgive me, but we're going to talk about the consciousness of men, which, yeah, it's a nice, cool thing to talk about. So anyway, thank you for tuning in, and I hope this was a little eye-opening for you to see what really is going on also in the United States that the government doesn't want you to know about, and start talking about it, you know, just like Palestine going on there. If we don't talk about it, this genocide just goes on. So, you know, if you've got a revolutionary heart and you want to do something wonderful, go stand with the Diné tribe, the Navajo, the Hopi. Go stand with them in solidarity, so they stay on their land and they can live in peace. Well, on that high note, again, blessings for you all, and aloha, and we'll catch you next week. We'll be right back. whatnot.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging ET in general out in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really kicked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay,